take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. This is the Boundless Sky Session, the second full day, 2017, July. So motivation has different sources. People are motivated by different things in this practice. For example, knowing the pain of the ordinary condition. You could say clarifying the first noble truth, the presence of dukkha, of suffering. And seeing how we can run and run on the hamster wheel of desire, acquisition, disappointment, and repeat ad infinitum. Desire, acquisition, disappointment, repeat. And knowing the pain of this cycle can give us fuel. Motivated by not wanting to be a hamster. Seeing how pervasive afflictive emotion can be, or is. The invisible or not so invisible wall of pride that's between us and connection with more than one or two people. The acid burn of jealousy. Such a strong sensation. It's a deep clue to something being off. Seeing how pervasive the feeling of insecurity is. The pervasive insecurity that is part and parcel with identification with our roles. Part and parcel with identification with our ideas. Our stories. And so this can motivate us to break out into a larger space. This can motivate us to shine through the false into the Dharma's clearing. We've been doing the silent illumination chant during the normal week at the monastery. And Hungzhe has this line that silent illumination is alertly seeing through confusion. That confusion and clarity can't be separated. It's like weaving gold on a jade loom. Both are precious. Both are precious. So, affliction motivates us, but affliction is not the only motivation that we can tap. In Zen, you may have heard of the teaching of the three pillars. And the three pillars of Zen, great determination, great faith, and great doubt. So great determination, we upgrade to great, when we graduate from, as I mentioned earlier, I feel like it, I don't feel like it. I'm not quite sure how we graduate from that. I feel like it, I don't feel like it state of mind. I think it has to do with seeing that practice is not really a choice. So we graduate from that wavering aspiration. And we just go straight ahead. We just have a steady, undeterred walking forth. And partially that's informed by impermanence. Knowing more than just on a head level that everything is going to shift and change. And that things are definitely not as solid as they seem. So we have great faith, one nano glimmer of our real nature lets us see a way out. Just the briefest glimpse is like a thorn that lodges in the heart. Or like a sliver that lodges in the heart, something that will not let you come to complete rest. And this glimmer of truth, and there are different kinds of insights that we see, it's a touchstone. In a way, it's a knowing that is unrelinquishable. Once the veils are parted for even a moment, you don't quite get to go back. So our insights into our potential to live in freedom, it could be experienced as a blessing. To infuse this life, which could just be being knocked around between pleasure and pain, gain and loss, it infuses that same wild and meandering life with deep meaning. Because the very same life that we suffered now becomes a means for so our insights could be a blessing, they could be a burden. It could be like that sliver. It could be a burden knowing that we're not living in touch with reality. Knowing that we are behind the veil, seemingly haunted. And so perspective is everything. So this faith is great because it doesn't depend on a particular experience. We're not just talking about some great religious zeal that has you run off to a cave for 3 years. It doesn't depend on a particular experience. It graces us through experience. And they say, it's always on display, the truth of the Dharma. It's always present. Buddha nature pervades the whole universe, existing right here now. When you hear that line in the morning, which way does your mind turn? Do you look under your cushion? Do you look in your thinking mind? Do you look at the person across from you? Does it even rouse you in the slightest? Catch your attention. They say that the truth is calling through every experience. What is this experience expounding? How is the Dharma being expressed? Not these inadequate words, but how, right here, in this very moment, how is the truth revealed? Sufis say it's like a continual whisper. Divine is whispering in your ear continually. And because that's never stopped, you don't recognize the whisper. Being's name spoken directly. Directly to you. Intimately to you. Great faith doesn't depend on a particular experience. Some of the forms are deeply frustrating. Perhaps we feel like people, a person trapped behind the finest sheet of glass. Me, walled off, separated by this transparent, clear barrier. And I can't quite actually touch the truth. I can't can't actually quite break out of my feeling of isolation, my feeling of being apart. So this faith expresses not just as inspiration or frustration, this faith is looking out of our eyes right now. It's thought that says, I am looking out of these eyes. But it's faith that looks out of these eyes right now. If looks is even correct. It's faith that beats this heart. It's faith that steps out into the night, hardly able to see the way, and still takes a step. It's faith that shows up despite the risk. It's the faith in us that shows up despite the doubt. It nags, it aches. This faith won't let us kick back in mundane fulfillments. It has much richer treasures in store for us. This great faith won't let us be satiated with doctrine. To this faith, on this side of the glass, the Buddha's words are an obstruction. Someone else's Dharma expression is like dust in the eyes, they say. This faith won't be fulfilled with plastic food behind a window case. The third pillar of Zen is often called great doubt. Great doubt. Now, great doubt doesn't mean that in your brilliance you outsmarted the Buddha and the Nagarjuna and you've realized that all of this is a sham. It doesn't mean that you let the skeptical mind flourish and just feast on whatever comes your way, breaking things down, analyzing, etc. You could call it great curiosity. It's a turning over of that energy that wants to know but knows from the outside. It's using that energy that wants to know what's true, but realizes that that can't be had through the usual modes of knowledge. So we call it great curiosity, great. Reality does not seem to open itself if all we can muster is a casual flirt. Great curiosity is great because it is engaged. It's enraptured. It's immersed in curiosity about what is this? What is this right here, right now? What is actually going on? Can you feel the energy of that question? To let that become more and more intense, to let that be like a fireball that consumes the limited dualistic mind. What is beyond the mind-filtered moment? what is left in the absence of the mind-woven self? Who or what will you be when you let the mind resolve into quiescence? There's something alive, clearly and fully alive. And what is that? What fixed beliefs still cloud my eyes? What fixed beliefs cover my experience? In other words, am I really seeing clearly? Am I seeing this life clearly, tasting it clearly, hearing it clearly? Am I thinking about it clearly? Something gives us feedback that we're not. And so we are curious, what is this belief? What is this idea I hold that's keeping me stuck? Great doubt has different flavors. For some people, it's got a quality of deep joy, wonder. The wonder of a child. I had an intermission in my interest in spiritual matters because when I was seven, the rabbi couldn't give me a satisfying answer about the nature of reality. And it was a kind of loss of faith in the adult world because I was intoxicated in love with the question of, how can there be a God? What created the space for anything to happen in the first place? You say there's a God, the creator, but what created the space for that to happen in the first place? And it wasn't until I came to Zen that I realized that that's a beautiful, profound liberating question. What would it be like to forget my position and perspective altogether and for a blessed moment disappear into the sound of a bird? And the poet Rilke, in one of his letters to an admirer, said that the deepest fulfillment he ever had in his life was when he was so absorbed in another being that he left his consciousness and entered theirs. He was speaking literally. He would experience the world through the eyes of a dog. And he said the only thing that popped him out was fear that he would get stuck there. But that kind of curiosity, that kind of playful looking into what this life is. What would it be like to forget our position, our perspective, our story for a moment altogether and disappear into a great blue spread of sky? What is it that tethers you to you? What is that tether made of? What would it be like to disappear into the eyes of a kind stranger? What would it take to lean through the fear that walls us off? This great curiosity doesn't have to be poetic. It can actually be very, very simple and direct, but the asking is all the difference. How wide is your awareness? Everyone in this room is clearly and perfectly aware. What are the parameters of that? Where's the end? Where's the border? Where's the point of origin? Where's the source? You know, there's the parable in the Lotus Sutra of the prodigal son who wanders around lost in a mind state of poverty, and all the while a jewel is sewn into the coat pocket. And he just never bothered to look. He just lived his life like most of us will, based on the assumption that there's nothing here of deep value. So it must be that the jewel is out there. The shiny stuff has got to just be out there. What would it be like to not have a story? To not have an opinion about your own life? Where did we get the idea that we always need to have an opinion? Like it's a piece of armor or a shield or some sort of life vein. Why does the mind feel it always has to have a comment? What would it be like to be naked of comment? Why are we afraid of that? Sometimes people come into interview, and from my limited perspective, they're actually resting in a kind of samadhi, or they're starting to abide in the clarity of their nature. And then they say, I can't handle this, I'm at ease. This has got to be harder, painful. There must be some drama. How could it be that I could just rest in my skin at peace? And what's the belief there that we've internalized about life? First noble truth is a relative truth. Suffering is a relative truth. And that gets turned over when we touch. Oh. It's pure and clear right here. I don't have to have a problem. But then the mind. And then the is it vulnerability of being a person at ease? Is it the simplicity that we recoil from about being a person without a problem? The self definitely depends on having a problem. It definitely depends on there being something that needs to be done or undone. What if everything that is arising for you in this moment is pure and perfect as it is? Why do you feel it's otherwise? Or maybe there is a certain radius that we're able to accept as pure and perfect, but why are some things inside that circle and some things out? Got to look into the belief that we carry. Why is joy success and sadness failure? Why is one texture good and the other bad? The texture doesn't say, I'm good. So great determination, great faith, great doubt, they flow into each other endlessly. The more we rouse determination, looking squarely and honestly at the human condition, the more motivation we'll have, as long as we don't slide into some kind of nihilistic pit. the more determination we'll have. The more determination we apply, the more experience we have, our faith grows. Our confidence in ourselves grows. The more confidence we have, the more we practice, the more these questions have the room to not be squashed by the mundane concerns. We have to have some mundane concerns. All of us have lives to take care of. But how is it that these fundamental questions get brushed aside as insignificant? So this Zazen is reclaiming our lives. It's reclaiming our lives, and nobody can do that for you. In fact, sometimes we think somebody else is going to bring us alive, and then inadvertently our own work can get put on pause. This Zazen is about truly reclaiming the richness of our own lives. And reclaim is not quite right. We could say that we're recognizing that we are always filled with life. There are no dead spots in any moment. There's not a single instant where the Dharma is not shining. And we moan and groan about the texture, picking and choosing, preferring one over the other. Even insects do that. All sentient beings avoid pain and move towards pleasure. And yet this very body and all its textures is reality through and through. It's reality through and through. What is in the way? That query, ride the breath. Let that query haunt you, if you can. This is the teaching of all the Buddhas and ancestors, that this life is gift through and through. What is in the way? What is in the way?